Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Suderstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adusk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, May 19th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Well, the markets catch up to the rising dollar we saw of late, along with the pressure on crude oil today. We have gold down 1730 at 1209.50. Silver's down 60 cents at 1718, along with platinum down 26 at 1154 and palladium down 11 at $779. The USDX today was up strong 1.09 at 95.27. Remember, it was breaking into the 93 level here just a couple days ago. Crude oil was down 217 at 57.30, and the paper markets today brought a little bit of pressure to some of them. The Dow was up 13 points at 18.312. NASDAQ down 8 at 5.070, and the S&P was down 1 at 21.27. Let's take a peek at the 10-year yield, 2.26%. And, of course, with that strength in the dollar, pressure on euro, 1.11 down, 1.46. And European markets are roaring. You have Germany, the DAX, that was up 2.25%, along with the Asia markets were also up, you know, just minimal, but they were up. You know, when you get into 20,000, Japan went over 20,000 once again, and Hong Kong was up 100 points. It's still just minimal considering the levels that they are at. And that was pretty much it for the markets today. There was one report. I'd like to bring it up here if I could find it out. It was about China. And I took a call right on just as I was getting it for the program. And I don't know if I can find it here real quick. There's a lot of Chinese news today. A lot of China news.
About a billion people over there. There's bound to be some kind of news.
Oh, the Chinese premier is starting a South American investment tour. The deal is worth billions. And the Brazilian president, along with China's premier, agreed on Tuesday to embark on studies for an ambitious railway linking Brazil's Atlantic coast with the Pacific ports in Peru, and announced billions in other investments and trade deals. They emphasized that the importance of the project to cut down the time and cost to move commodities to the Asian market, a new path to Asia will be open for Brazil. It will cross our country from east to west and the South American continent. The memorandum of agreement to begin these studies on the Trans-Andean Railway will also involve the Peruvian government. I just thought that was interesting.
It's real interesting.
Yes,
you know
it
what
is.
They're trying to replace there?
The Panama Canal.
Exactly right.
Yep.
Because the Panama Canal has limited width. All right, that's part of the problem. And I'm betting you that China wants to park some ships on the Pacific side of South America that are much too wide to go through the Panama Canal. So if you can build a railroad line and bring the goods up to the, you can avoid going around Cape Horn. And isn't Cape Horn, in any case, the south end of South America, and avoid going through the Panama Canal? Interesting. I mean, it would be a strategic installation. It would be the sort of thing that would certainly earn a lot of applause from people in South America. And it really is. I mean, the United States doesn't own the Panama Canal anymore.
No, China
Nevertheless,
does.
Pardon me?
China runs it.
Do they run it or own it?
We gave it to them. No, I don't know if they lease it. I don't know if they lease it. But
I think they still own it. China might manage it. I don't know about that. But in any case, in people's mind, the Panama Canal is still, I think, associated with the United States. Maybe only in senior citizens like myself. But I think a lot of people still think of it that way. From my perspective, a trans-South American railroad would, another blow, another evidence that the United States is not the same country it was 10 years, 20 years, 40 years ago.
Well, the stop for the premier's first on a four-nation South American tour includes Chile, Peru, and Colombia. And it wasn't that long ago we opened up trade agreements with some of those countries. So it's kind of interesting to see what it actually does to the trade agreements that we made with them. So maybe it is a good thing because now our trade agreements, I don't know if they, will weaken. But China still remains the top trading partner for Latin America and the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is interesting. You're right. They're certainly positioning themselves and they're strengthening there, and they are expanding. So it's interesting.
Yeah, they're booming out. How far they can go remains to be seen, but they're certainly expanding right now, and we'll see how long they can continue to do so, and how long they're even willing to do so. Historically, China has not been an expansionist country in the sense that Germany was, or the United States was, or England was. They pretty much just minded their own business without being too invasive. It happens from time to time. Tibet's classic example, but for the most part, it's unusual for them to be stepping out to become more and more involved in a create a greater presence in foreign countries. And you have to wonder if their culture is really changing, or is something else happening? Is someone giving them orders? Are they given orders themselves and they've decided to change their style from being pretty much withdrawn to being somewhat more aggressive?
I just think it's the way of the world with the open communications, the ability to move about and to make these agreements, and with the weakening of our country, they're taking advantage of an opportunity to grow. They need to, I don't think they really care that much for the people in China, but considering the government that they have, but they're certainly taking advantage, and I read an article a very long time ago that the Chinese, and I don't think they change. They take advantage, but they don't change. It's so deeply inbred in the way they govern and the way they do things that they reach their hand out as a friend, and then the next thing
You have chop suey.
You have chop suey, and you're the chop, and you're the suey.
Later again, you're hungry all over. But where I'm part of what I was wondering about is this. Is China reaching out because it sees an advantage, or is China reaching out because it's desperate and it realizes that it can't simply live, it can't support itself, it can't get by on what it can generate internally? It requires outside sources of supplies of at least raw materials and maybe more than that in order to hold their economy and their nation together. You see what I'm saying?
Well,
are they reaching out because they're getting ready to march, or are they reaching out because they're afraid they're going to collapse?
I don't think they're afraid of collapsing, but their economy is changing. It's transforming, and they're now become a consumer-based economy, and it is slowing down. So, you know, they do have to reach out, and they do need these resources. So, so you know, they need it, and yet they're going to capitalize. And I'm sure if they didn't have to, they wouldn't. And
well, it's going to be a good thing for South America.
Yeah.
Because there means there will be increased competition for whatever raw materials China is trying to acquire. It'll be a bad thing for the rest of the world insofar as we are hoping and perhaps even expecting to get by with relatively cheap commodities and raw materials. And this will only, it will tend to, the increased demand should translate into in higher prices. And that will affect everybody around the world. It's going to be... it may be that the Chinese economy is going to be improved, and South American economies will probably be improved. But I wonder what's going to happen to the rest of the world. I don't think it's going to be anything dramatic, but I expect that there will be, a little more drag on the United States economy, a little more drag on the European economy. But we'll see.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So what's next, Melody?
Well, there was another report out today. A former Maryland governor, Martin O'Malley, his big headlines, how the close relationship that he's had with the Clintons. And he is expected to announce his presidential campaign here at the end of May. And supposedly, I think I mentioned, and I do... I've said this for a very long time, that Martin O'Malley, would be the Democratic nominee for the presidential race. He's going to be the Democratic presidential.
You think he's going to win?
And I do believe he has a good possibility of winning. I never thought when Hillary announced her her campaign, her presidential campaign, that she was really serious about it. And I think she did it to get attention. And I think whoever she backs will be the main character that they want. And I think she will back O'Malley. And
well, it's certainly interesting that he was at least a former friend of the Clintons.
Very big friend. There was a lot of fundraisers together and rallies and.
Has the friendship frayed, or is it still intact?
I think it's still intact.
Well, if it is, then something strange is happening. I wouldn't expect anybody who's buddies with the Clintons to run against Hillary for the presidential
nomination. I think it was all set up. The whole point, she wasn't really serious about running anyway. And it's whoever she, and I've said for 4 years, it's who she supports in this election. And I think she will support him.
Well, it's
And I have mentioned O'Malley for months, even though his name wasn't even mentioned. It's going to be O'Malley. It's going to be O'Malley. And here we are. It's O'Malley.
I am in great fear right now because I'm afraid we're coming on one of those moments where I'll never hear the end of it. I'll never hear the end. You remember what I told you about O'Malley? Remember? I told you. I've been talking.
Let me tell you something. My predictions and my views are more accurate than most I know of these so-called experts and their predictions. And it's because I quietly view what's going on. I don't make a prediction so I can go out and say that I'm right. And eventually, if you're wrong enough, eventually that right time comes along. And I think that's what happens. They make so many predictions. They're wrong so many times. And no one ever remembers... you know, when they do get one right, nobody remembers the number of times that they're wrong. And so when I make predictions, they're always right.
Nobody's predictions are always right, except for mine. Mine are the only ones that are always
right. You make light.
I have a monopoly on that melody. But in any case, we will watch and see what happens. But I don't agree that Hillary got into this half-heartedly.
She did.
Well,
too much baggage.
She might have gotten into it stupidly. I'll give you that. But I don't doubt for a minute that she was ready to murder people in order to be the Democratic nominee for President of the United States. This is a very tough business, running for president. I mean, you got to be crazy, almost. I would say, I mean, if you had to go ahead and examine, put everybody who ran for president last 100 years, subject them to mental health care analysis and see how many of them turn out to be crazy. This is a tough, tough business, and she has to know that. I mean, the expense of time, energy, money, put up with people calling you names. I mean, you can see what it does once you get elected. It's even worse if you
win. I bet she's out of the race in a year.
Yeah, it might be.
And you can see the way her whole campaign is being handled.
Oh, I agree.
I mean, it's ridiculous. She didn't enter the race to win.
I agree that the way it's being handled appears to be inept. Right? I agree with that. But I'm just saying that woman wants to be president I want ice cream. You understand? I mean, don't get between me and the refrigerator if there's any ice cream in there.
I'll guarantee you she's probably setting it more up for her daughter. But Hillary Clinton does not want to be president. She might.
I don't blame her.
You will not hear it come out of her lips. She doesn't want to be president.
I say tomato and you say tomato. What else have we got? Here's got something here from the trade. This is from the John Birch Society. I got an email from them today, which pretty much pleased me. Now, I've never attended a John Birch meeting. I've never been a member of the John Birch Society, never attended any meetings. But I'm looking at them, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, we got the Republican racket, and we got the Democrat racket, and that's what the two parties are. We call them parties, but what they are, rackets. And if you vote for the Democrats, they'll give you bigger and bigger government, higher taxes. And if you vote for the Republicans, they're going to give you richer and richer, super rich, and global free trade and nothing for you. Neither one of those parties, neither one of those two rackets is doing us any good. I'm looking at the John Birch Society. They just sent me an email today, and I took a moment to read it. And I think, my God, these people, you know, maybe they got something going here. I don't even know if they plan to put up any candidates. I have no idea. I don't know if they're just educational or they're going to run candidates in the next election. I have no idea. But for the moment, at least, I am a little bit, I'm saying, hey, wait a second. Maybe there is something like a viable third choice here, a third way, something other than the Democrat racket and the Republican racket. Maybe there's something else. Here's the email. It's brief, doesn't not too many words. It says Trade Promotional Authority. That's also known as the Fast Track Authority, which I am opposed to. We talked about it on the program last week, and it violates the Constitution in a number of ways. And the whole thing is, it's unconstitutional, and they're trying to give Obama, the Congress wants to give Obama fast-track authority to negotiate the trade agreement with Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership. They want him to do it, so he takes all the responsibility. Congress doesn't have to take any responsibility. They want it. I'd like to see it stop. John Birch Society wants to see that trade promotional authority, the fast track authority. They want that stopped also. Here's a short version. We won the trade promotional authority cloture vote on Tuesday. It did not get enough votes to block filibuster efforts, but lost on Thursday. Senate had enough votes to overcome any filibuster effort. So the Senate plans to begin debating trade promotional authority, again, the fast track authority, this week, and to vote on the TPA bill, that's again trade promotional authority bill, either this week or when they return from the 1 week Memorial Day recess. Representative Paul Ryan, Republican of Wisconsin, claims to have enough votes to pass TPA, again, Trade Promotional Authority, Fast Track, as well as any trade deals. Thank you very much, Mr. Ryan. That's the last time I will vote for you in this life. If you are for those things, I'm going to endeavor to remember Representative Ryan. Bye-bye. You can kiss my vote goodbye. Now is the time to call your senators and representatives in opposition to Trade Promotional Authority. All right? Call first, then follow with an email. Now, they give us a sample email, and I can't provide that over the radio program, but you could Google this information. Just Google John Birch Society plus TPA. All right, and you should be able to find some of this information. But it does give us, it says, call your senators. And the number for your senators is 202-224-3121. All right, and I'll give that to you again in a moment. And then call your representatives, 202-225-3121. The numbers are identical except for the last digit of the middle three numbers. Call your senators, 202-224-3121. Call your representatives, 202-225-3121. All right? Let them know that you don't want this global free trade. You don't want the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You don't want Obama given authority, supposedly. They can't even legally give him authority to violate the Constitution, but they're doing it anyway. And if you are concerned about this, you can visit the John Birch Society. Take a look at their website. They'll give you some talking points if you need them. You can find them in other places besides that. But call your senators, 202-224-3121. Representatives, 202-225-3121. Give them a call. Let them know. Lean on them. We're going to take a break. We're well into our commercial time. And Frank is probably angry at me because I kept talking. But Frank will have to learn to live with it once in a while. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
An important message from Donald Trump and Americans for Limited Government.
While I'm a Republican, right now some in the Republican Party are working overtime to hand more power to President Obama. These same people are turning their backs on the American workers and businesses. It's unbelievable. I learned a long time ago, a bad deal is far worse than no deal at all. And the Obama Trans-Pacific Partnership and Fast Track are a bad, bad deal. For American businesses, for workers, for taxpayers, it's a huge set of handouts for a few insiders that don't even care about our great, great America. Congress has to stand up and defeat this raw power grab. With the dismal Obama track record, why should a Republican Congress give him more power and gut the Constitution to do it? It's just crazy. Tell your congressman and senator, vote no on Fast Track.
Take action at ObamaTrade.com. ObamaTrade.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with co-host Middle East Cedarstrom, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, I would like the listeners to say a little prayer for Jennifer Chapman. Judy Chapman, Bob Chapman's wife, is ill, very ill, and so I would like the listeners to say a prayer for the Chapman family today. I think they need it, so.
All right.
And we'll keep you posted.
Okay. Here's something, sign of the times. This is from the Associated Press. Facing a $1 billion deficit, Arizona sharply limits welfare. And the point behind this is we're talking about the state of Arizona, not talking about the whole country, but we are talking about a principle that we're likely to see more of if the economy does not improve. If the economy doesn't improve, tax revenues do not increase. Tax revenues may shrink. As tax revenues shrink, government has, especially state governments, which can't go into debt the same way the federal government can. They are almost debt-free. They tend to be nearly debt-free. They can't just borrow in order to make good on their welfare payments or any of their payments. And so they have to cut costs. They don't have enough money. They've got to cut costs, and that's what's happening. Facing a $1 billion budget deficit, Arizona's Republican-led legislature has reduced the lifetime limit for welfare recipients to the shortest window in the nation. Low-income families on welfare will now have their benefits cut off after just 12 months. All right. As a result, the Arizona Department of Economic Security will drop at least 1,600 families, including more than 2,700 children, from the state's federally funded welfare programs on July 1st, 2016. The cuts of at least $4 million reflect a prevailing mood among the lawmakers in control of Arizona that welfare, Medicaid, and other public assistance programs are crutches that keep the poor from getting back on their feet and achieving their potential. So is global free trade. But that being what it is, we still see that they're going to start cutting some of these programs. They're doing it in Arizona. I'm sure they're doing it in other states as well. And all it does is create more tension for poor people who have a reputation on the one hand of exploiting welfare and becoming comfortable with it and say, hey, this is cool. You know, we can live without working. And on the other hand, they can't just work their way out of this system insofar as we've moved jobs overseas. The companies that are coming back, they're coming back with robots rather than job opportunities for the poor. This is evidence of a serious problem that's only going to get worse. It's going to become tougher and tougher for poor people to survive in this country and maintain any kind of a halfway decent standard of living. And it's going to happen in part because of the global free trade. It's going to happen in part because the economy is declining. It's going to happen in part because state governments are running out of cash. It's going to happen big time if the federal government ever admits it's bankrupt, which is what it is. And if there's a lesson in all of this, the lesson is that if you are poor and you're on welfare, you better not count on being able to collect that welfare for too far into the future. All right? If you were smart, you'd get out of bed and get a job, even if it was something like minimum wage. Your ability to work is something you may be able to count on in the future. If you haven't had jobs and you don't know how to work, and it's something you learn, it's not just, you know, working isn't just something where you show up and say, okay, I'm here, we're the comic books. Work really means you have to you have to exert yourself, you have to expend energy, you have to think about things, you have to try to do a good job, you try to do a fast job. And if you can learn that, you can have some sort of, you have a possibility for having a decent future. And if you don't learn that, you're going to have to either inherit a lot of money or win the lottery or be a thug and rob people or just embrace poverty, because that's where you're going to stay. You know, people need to get a job, not just because they need to get off welfare. That's not the point. In the end, I don't think you can count on welfare, and that's part of the limit, and that's part of the evidence in the story. In the end, you can't really count on it. Find a job. You may need it.
So many of these people that are on welfare, though, they're mentally ill. There was one lady that was involved in this article where she was dyslexic, can't work, and has a child. And I'm thinking, well, if you have all those problems, I mean, why would you even have a child to begin with? But, you know, we all know the answer to that. And
I don't know the answer.
Well, I'm not going to go into
it. Well, explain it to me. I wish you would.
The birds and the bees. No.
What makes you think we all know these things, Melody? That's what the purpose of this program is, to communicate
and
share.
What information.
Here's something you know. I'm inquiring minds, you know, here I am.
The problem I have with this is, you know, I agree, you're going to see these states cut these welfare benefits, but they don't offer. You have 2,700 children. What do they offer as a replacement?
They don't have.
They're not offering that, exactly. So
I'm just saying, find a job. And it's easy to say, and it's not easily done. And as I'm saying, I'm not suggesting that it's going to be easy for anyone to find a job. But if you need to try to do that, to establish a history and a capacity for work.
I get that, Al. But I think these states, when they cut these programs, which I'm in agreement of cutting, I don't know if you wean them off. I don't know what you do, but, you know, you have problems with the mentally ill. You're going to have problems with the mentally ill. I mean, hey, you might have some senior citizens. I don't know if they're on welfare or Social Security, but they'll end up dying. Maybe that is what they want.
I don't know what they want. I'm just saying that if they're broke, they're broke. And more than likely, the first people to see their subsidies cut won't be the rich landowners or ranchers or whatever. But they may see their subsidies cut too, and rightfully so. We are going with too many people. If half the country are getting checks from the government, I'm willing to bet you that the day is coming when the number is going to be reduced from half to 20%.
Yep.
And maybe less than that, maybe 10%. It's hard to say, but we're not going to continue just expanding the number of people get checks from government. We can't. It just can't be. So
maybe the local churches will have to step up, and maybe way it's supposed to, the local charities and so forth.
I agree.
And again, they still have their other benefits. They still have their, you know, food stamps and, you know, everything, other programs that they get from the government. This is just one portion of the benefits that they receive.
I understand. It's not the end of the world per se, but these people are already under a lot of stress. You know, this is...
Are they?
No, yeah, they are.
You think?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're under a lot of stress. They don't have things they'd like to have. They don't have they don't have much of an opportunity to get them, not easily. I don't know what you're going to do with these people. And there's the problem. What are you going to do with these people? I don't have an answer for this. You know, what are you going to do? You can't keep feeding them because the money isn't there. You can't let them starve to death. What are we going to do? It may be that we have to go back to charity, which is the way this country was supposed. Instead of welfare, we had charity.
Mm-hmm.
All right? You went to the church. If you were down on your luck, you went to the church. And one way or another, things worked out, and they found a job for you. You know, some of these things are problems that are, to some degree, even caused by minimum wage. There are people that don't have jobs right now who can't get a job. Nobody's going to hire them for $10 an hour. But they might have been able to get a job for $4 an hour. Now, I'm not arguing that's a good wage. I'm not saying that's a good thing. But still, they might have been able to get a job. And the point I'm trying to illustrate is that we think we're doing wondrous things when we say we're going to have a minimum wage. Well, it sounds like a nice idea. I mean, everybody says, I mean, it sounds, hooray, you know, everybody has a, you get a salary that you can live off of, a wage, a livable wage. That sounds like a wonderful idea. And I can't say that it's wrong, but it's not a purely wonderful idea because it means that sometimes, you know, people can't get a job. They can't, they're not worth $10 an hour. They're not worth minimum wage, but we might hire them for, you know, $4 an hour. Is that a good thing? It's a place to learn to work if you want to. And if you don't want to learn, then you're going to be fired. And I don't know what's going to happen to you. But again, and I don't know. And I'm not saying that anybody in this situation is right or anyone is wrong. I'm just saying we have reached a point that is no longer tenable. Right? We can't continue to afford the people the subsidies the government provides. People have the subsidies, can't afford, can't make it without the subsidies. What are we going to do? Raise taxes? I think we should, I think the solution finally occurs to me, Melody.
What's that?
The government has to tax the people in Mexico. They're moving up here anyway. Might as well get them on the tax rolls while they're down there in Mexico.
Well, no, now didn't you know they're getting benefits? They're going to get. You know, they're getting tax benefits.
Well, then they should be paying taxes.
They should.
I agree. Hey, there is a solution, and maybe the Canadians too. We could start. I think we have occasional Canadian listeners to the program. Perhaps the Canadian people wouldn't mind paying taxes to Uncle Sam, so we can afford to continue to subsidize the wealthy and the poor. If we've got any Canadians listening to the program who are in favor of supporting Canadian taxes to support the American rich and the American poor, please feel free to speak up. What else, Melody?
Oh, I was just, so we'll be heading here for a break here shortly.
All right, I've got one, Warren Buffett. Here's an article from GoldEagle.com. And the headline is Warren Buffett predicting upcoming stock market crash. And there, the article is about Buffett and others are dropping stocks. And the author of the article at GoldEagle.com interprets this shedding of stocks. They interpret this as evidence that Warren Buffett, John Paulson, George Soros, some of the most influential and most prosperous investors in the world, they're getting rid of their stocks, or at least some of them. Stock market is at record high. Standard Poor's keeping pace, Dow is high. But if we follow the example of Warren Buffett, his holding Berkshire Hathaway has been dumping exposure to American stocks that rely on consumer spending. Over a two-year period, Buffett's holding company sold off 96.8% of its holdings in Johnson & Johnson, sold off 99.7% in Kraft Foods. They dumped almost 12% in Procter & Gamble. Point being, they do not think the consumers are going to be in a position to consume, and this is a little bit consistent with what we just read and reported on from Arizona. People aren't going to have enough money, and Buffett believes that, apparently believes it, because he's getting out of the businesses, out of the stocks that expect consumers to continue to consume. He says, no, I don't think they will. I'm going to look for greener pastures. We'll take a break for some commercials right now, and we'll be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article that was...
Wait, I have a great... Before you go into that, Al, I do have a great special today. I have an extra fine $5 Indian gold piece. It's great for... it's got that semi-numismatic value. It is circulated, and it's priced very, very good in this special. We have 21-ounce silver eagles, and you can pick up this whole package for $800. It's $800, includes your shipping cost for 21-ounce silver eagles and a $5 Indian gold piece. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
Got an article here that was written by Jim Rickards, who's the editor of Strategic Intelligence. He's written a couple of books, and any of you will recognize the name. And the headline is, Buffett takes a page from Inflation King's playbook. And what he's writing about is he's arguing that Warren Buffett appears to be investing today according to the same strategy as it was used by a man named Hugo Stinnes. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing the name correctly, but the last name is S-T-I-N-N-E-S. Hugo Stinnes, Hugo Stinnes, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. This was back in the 1920s. And Hugo Stinnes became the wealthiest man in Germany. And he started out with his own company when he was 20 years old. And one thing led to another. He died by the time he was 54. He died relatively early. But according to Rickards, to understand Stinnes' wealth, recall that from 1922 to 23, Germany suffered the worst hyperinflation experienced by a major industrial company in modern times. the exchange rate between the German paper currency, the Reichsmark, and the dollar went from 208 to 1, 208 Reichsmarks to a dollar in 1921, to 4.2 trillion Reichsmarks to $1 in late 1923. In less than 24 months, it went from 208 to the dollar to 4.2 trillion to the dollar. Most people were destroyed by this hyperinflation. Stennis was not. Why did he do that? Stennis was, he inherited, after he started his own business, he inherited his father's business later on. He expanded it by buying his own mines. Then he diversified into shipping, buying cargo lines. His own vessels were used to transport his coal within Germany along the Rhine River and from his mines abroad. His vessels also carried lumber and grain. This diversification included ownership of a leading newspaper. Now, what we're getting to is that Stennis was buying things, all right, in the same sense that Warren Buffett bought a railroad. This is a hard asset. You have rails, you have train cars, you have engines, all right? Stennis had mines, and he had boats, he had shipping lines, and so on. He bought hard assets, not fancy little. He did not invest in paper debt because he knew it would be wiped out by hyperinflation. But he bought tangible things. And based on that, when the hyperinflation hit, he was able to get by because his tangible things continued to maintain their value, their necessity. They were fundamentals. They were important, and they maintained value throughout the era of hyperinflation. But the problem is someone else had invested in a stock in some company or a bond in some government. And let's suppose they had a $1 million bond. Well, or a $1 million Reichsmark bond. All right, which was worth about a half a cent per Reichsmark, a million of them, translate into, I don't know. I can't do math anymore. I used to be able to do it well. I'm getting to a point in life where I just don't do math well anymore. The point is, if you had paper debt instruments, they were wiped out. They were denominated in $1 million. That's big money today. But 2 years from now, after a dose of extreme hyperinflation, it's worthless. It has no value. The hyperinflation destroys the paper debt instruments. This guy Stennis understood the nature of money. It was the first thing he understood. All right? He understood how money works, and he understood that the Reichsmark was a fiat currency. It could not last. It was destined for hyperinflation. And he had enough intelligence to sit back and say, wait a second, this is going to happen pretty fast. Maybe within a decade. He wasn't looking for it to happen next week, but he was, when he first figured this out, it might have been a decade before things really hit the fan. It might have been 2 years, it might have been 5 years. I don't know when he figured it out, but first, he had sufficient education to understand the nature of money and understand what hyperinflation means. And second, he had sufficient intelligence to objectively perceive an imminent period of hyperinflation in Germany. And third, he had sufficient courage to trust and act on his own perceptions. You know, a lot of people can see this stuff coming, but they're afraid to act. They have enough brains, they have enough education. They can see what's coming. They say, oh, I don't know, I don't want to do anything. If you don't have the courage to act, your perceptions are virtually worthless. Four, he borrowed German fiat currency before the hyperinflation began. He borrowed big time. Right? Because he knew he'd be able to pay off with virtually worthless currency. Hyperinflation, he took out a loan for 3 years, 5 years. He knew by the time we get to this, I'll be able to pay off this loan with currency that isn't worth the price of toilet paper. He knew the hyperinflation was coming. He invested. He borrowed the money. Then he invested in hard assets whose value would not be destroyed by hyperinflation. And finally, number six of the items, he repaid his debts with hyperinflated and therefore worthless fiat Reichmarks. Now, the point of this story, and this is my summary that I just produced, but Rickards presents the story of this guy, Hugo Stennis, S-T-I-N-N-E-S. And you could look this up if you were inclined. And you might want to learn from Stennis' example. And Ricketts is arguing that Buffett is doing this, Warren Buffett is doing the same thing today as Stennis did almost 100 years ago. And the implication is that Warren Buffett is anticipating a big dose of hyperinflation in this country. Now, that's Ricketts' analysis. Just because Ricketts says this doesn't mean it's so because I say so, but it is a compelling and fascinating analysis, and it might be so. And there are other people, John Williams at shadowstats.com, he believes we're headed for an episode of hyperinflation. And I believe we are too. Certainly inflation, significant inflation. And when that inflation hits, it means that if you're holding a paper debt instrument, you loaned $100,000, $10,000, $1,000 to somebody, they're going to pay you back with cheaper dollars. You are going to lose some significant percentage of the purchasing power of your paper debt instrument if we are headed into significant inflation and or hyperinflation. If we get into hyperinflation, you're going to pay for all your paper debt instruments, your pension funds, your bank accounts, all of it, your stocks, your bonds, are all going to turn out, if they're denominated in dollars, they're going to turn out to be more or less, they're going to be severely devalued, and they might turn out to be worthless. Right? And Ricketts makes an interesting article, the comparison between Buffett and Hugo Stennis almost 100 years ago. They're both doing the same things. They were both spectacular investors during their era, and they both made a killing because he could correctly anticipate hyperinflation coming. He made just more money than probably people can count because he anticipated that correctly. He borrowed knowing he'd be able to pay back, or believing he'd be able to pay back with cheaper dollars. And you have to give him credit, not just because he had intelligence, but because he had huge courage. You know, Stennis could have lost everything if there wasn't hyperinflation. And he thought it was coming, and he bet wrong. Turned out they didn't have any hyperinflation. He could have lost everything he had, been reduced to nothing. So the whole thing, the argument, this particular presentation depends on the premise that hyperinflation, Stennis saw the hyperinflation and he was able to profit. He understood the nature of money, understood what it meant. He acted accordingly, and he got fabulously wealthy. Warren Buffett, his actions, according to Ricketts, are similar to that of Stennis 100 years ago. And Warren Buffett, Ricketts, therefore, presumes that Buffett must be acting from the same beliefs. He believes we are going to see significant hyperinflation in the near future. Now, Buffett is not a prophet. Ricketts isn't necessarily analyzing this correctly, but it's all plausible. It all seems reasonable to me. And it's the sort of thing where if you can catch a copy of this article, all right, by Jim Ricketts, just Google Jim Ricketts. And the headline of the article, Buffett, just Jim Ricketts plus Buffett. Google the two of them. You'll find this article. Read it closely, and it might be instructive. It might actually help you understand where we might be, and you can make up your own mind whether our economy is or is not in that position. Are we really approaching a moment of hyperinflation? Is that likely to happen? And if it is, there are things you can do to make yourself, to increase your wealth. And there's other things that you can do that everybody's going to probably tend to do that will cause you to be wiped out. If hyperinflation is coming, you want hard assets. Railroads, ships, coal mines, gold, silver, hard assets. All right? I think they're probably correct. I can't tell you it's God's truth, but it seems that way to me. What do you think, Melody?
Well, I don't think anyone can deny that inflation is in our future, hyperinflation, certainly based on what happens to a currency. We have history that has shown time and time again this is what happens. We have countries that have had their currencies and their countries have dived into hyperinflation. And certainly buying the hard assets is... It makes sense. So my question is, these guys, they have the billions of dollars to do what they do. If you look at what Buffett did with his money, I mean, he's buying up these hard assets, but, he gave all his money to Gates, So, I mean, to which...
I agree. There's no guarantee why Buffett is doing what he's doing.
Yeah, so, He just has too much money. He doesn't know what to do with. What else do you do when you're a billionaire? And I think the guy...
Let me give all the billionaires, an email. I'll send you my address, and I'll tell you, you can send your extra billions, or at least whatever reasonable
percentage. Sorry, I'm not so sure that maybe the guy Stennis, maybe he was had a little bit more sense, but Buffett, he's a ruthless man. He's not as cute, as warm as he projects on all these TV programs that he's ruthless, he's cold. He's a businessman, and he buys these things to make a profit, and I'm sure when you get to that realm of wealth, I don't think hyperinflation is. How much of a worry can it be for you?
I don't think it is a worry.
It isn't. So to buy these assets,
saying at least Rickards is arguing that Buffett, looking out, he's a superb investor. He's looking into the future. So I think we're going to have hyperinflation, and if we are, then number one, I want to borrow as much as I can. That's one of the things we can do. I can borrow because I'm going to be able to pay it off with fantastically devalued.
You've got easy money. That's why they borrow.
Well, it's also because it's fiat currency. This whole notion about hyperinflation goes to foundation as we've got the fiat currency in this place.
So I mean,
for later, whether the hyperinflation hits this year, next year, a decade from now, unknown, but it is inevitable when you would grab hold of a fiat currency. They all die in hyperinflation, and it's the moment. What is hyperinflation? A lot of people think it's mathematics or something like that. It's the result of some mathematical formula in economics, and it's not. What it is an expression of the people have finally lost confidence in their fiat currency. All right? I might be out here selling cars. All right? Selling Cadillacs. And I will sell a Cadillac today for $50,000. But a month from now, because of hyperinflation, I might sell the same car. I won't give up on the currency completely, but I won't let you have one for 50 grand. I'm going to need 80 grand. Because of hyperinflation. And a month after that, I'll still be selling Cadillacs if anybody wants to buy them, but I won't sell them to you for 80 grand. I'm going to have 150 grand for the Cadillac. The hyperinflation will push prices higher and higher. People will try to buy with wheelbarrows full of currency as they did during the fall of the Weimar Republic. But they will cling to the currency up to a final moment where they just say, that's it, this stuff's worthless. They lose all confidence, the currency dies. Hyperinflation reflects a final loss. All the time it's happening, it's a process of losing confidence in your currency, and you finally get to a point where you say, this is worthless, it's zero. But it's all about public confidence. And when that's gone, currency, fiat currency is worthless. That's not true with gold or silver. That gold or silver will be worth something 1,000 years from now. All right. It's a kind of confidence also, but it's not the immediate confidence that you find in paper and digits. It lasts for centuries. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening to Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.